So today's sheet is dealing with the issue, the contemporary issue of women's rabbis. Why did I decide to talk about this? So I happened to notice that just yesterday, and it doesn't get much more contemporaneous than this, just yesterday there was an article, and I hold it up for your viewing here, in the Jewish Chronicle in London, where a very happy-looking lady, who's got a photograph here, Mrs. Karen Appleby, who I don't know, is the newly elected chair of St. Alban's Synagogue, a very small synagogue in a city just north of London. Why would that make the news? That makes the news because she's the first ever person in England to be the chairman, to be the president of an Orthodox synagogue. Up until last year, this was prohibited under the laws of the United Synagogue, which is the Orthodox synagogue, one of the Orthodox synagogue bodies in England. And the London-based thing did not approve of it, halachically. But the London-based thing gave a sack at the end of last year that this was acceptable. And now this is seen as being something of a breakthrough.
To be the president of the shul.
The president of the shul. She's not a rabbi. We're talking about the lay leader of the shul. Now, you may come to me and say, well, that's not a big deal. In America, that's been happening for 40, 50 years. And it depends maybe on where you're from, etc. In England, this is a big deal. And this lady has, as far as she's concerned, broken new ground. The question is that right? Is that wrong? It's not the same question as women rabbis, but we will see that women rabbis is a big umbrella type question, which we have to break down and look at the specific issues. So what I want to do with you today is basically go through what the issues are. There will not be a clear conclusion, and it's not for me to express my personal opinion because, you know, what use is that to anybody? But I'd like to show you some sources. There are three basic areas to look at. There's halakha, and you can break down the role of the rabbi into, you know, X specifics and ask, is that allowed for a woman? Is that allowed for a woman? Is that allowed for a woman? And I will do that. And I've broken down the role of a rabbi potentially into 12 different areas. Now, this doesn't mean that every rabbi does this, and there may be other things that rabbis do that are not on this list. If there are, then tell me, and we can talk about that too. But I've broken it down to 1, receiving smicha; 2, ruling in halacha; 3, leading prayer services; 4, conducting weddings and funerals; reading out from the Torah, laning, giving sermons in the shul, pastoral work, counseling, education, teaching Torah, providing theological guidance, public communal leadership, and sitting on a base din. Now again, not all rabbis do all of these things, but most rabbis do some of these things. And pastoral work means like communal work, looking up to people in births, marriages, and deaths, visiting the sick, all that kind of thing. But then there are hashkafa issues, which I think have to be dealt with as well. It may well be that what we're dealing with here is not just halakha, but what they call meta-halakha. Meaning, there are more than just halachic rules, there are halachic values. There's a bigger picture. Sometimes you may be able to break something down into parts and say that each of those parts is okay in isolation, but when seen as a whole, there's something wrong with the whole. How do you judge that? How do you get a feel for that? Sometimes things may be halakhically, technically okay, but not correct. That's fundamental in halakha, always has been. There are more than just the details, there's the big picture. How do we plug that into women's issues generally and women rabbis specifically? We'll talk a little bit about that, and that's where, of course, you get difference of opinion. You have to ask, I think, hashgraphically, why should there be women rabbis? What is the pressure? Where is that coming from? We'll see some problems, either real or perceived, with the status quo. Do we go with the slippery slope argument? Do we say, well, today women rabbis, tomorrow, you know, women are going to be, I don't know what, whatever. I don't know what the next thing is from women rabbis. But do we go with the slippery slope arguments and say, if we give an inch, people will take a mile? Or do we say, no, that's not logical, let's look at each issue as it comes, and if it's okay, it's okay. Let's not say things are prohibited just because we're frightened where they might lead. These are all major hashgraphic points. And also to avoid pressure from people who come at it with a very non-halachic perspective. There are people who use the line, where there's a rabbinic will, there's a halachic way. This is not true in terms of an understanding of the halachic process. The implication of that statement, which you hear occasionally from sort of feminist thinkers, is that the only thing that's stopping halacha from doing whatever we want it to do is difficult rabbis. Once we persuade the rabbis to change their minds and to move themselves into the 21st century, the halacha will just follow. And that's really not the case. That's just based on a misunderstanding of the system as a whole. Okay, there is an element of truth to you know, halacha is decided by rabbis, and there is a certain amount of discretion in certain areas, and that can change with time. But there are halachic principles which cannot just be trodden over, and therefore we'll look at those as well. Let's have a look at the problems. Some people perceive these, and some of these are real problems. I've listed five, and again, please add more if you think there are others. Why is there a push for women rabbis? I put here a lack of opportunity for women to develop careers in Torah. What can a woman do if she wants a career in... career perhaps is the wrong word, because career implies, you know, career building. But she wants to make a life of Torah leadership. What can she do? Marry a rabbi? Okay, that sounds a bit funny that you have to marry a man in order to be what you want to be. That's not really a very 21st century approach to things, and not necessarily a Jewish approach to things, necessarily. Is there wasted intellectual and spiritual talent that we're just not using because women are excluded from these major communal positions? Again, I'm not saying that I particularly think these, but these are things that people say. Some women express frustration that we've teased women by leading them on and educating them to a certain point, giving them skills in halakha, in gemara, in Jewish thinking, and tech skills, etc. And then they hit their heads on the glass ceiling. And we say, nope, yeah, that's as much as you can do. You can't do any more. Is that fair? Is that right? Is that an appropriate way to lead people on and then tell them they can't go to the next level? There's another issue, which is, leaving aside women rabbis, do we train women properly to do what they do right now? Are there people who take leadership roles just because they happen to be married to rabbis, but actually they don't really know how to be leaders, and they need to be helped with that? Is there a feeling of women's disenfranchisement from Jewish life? And if so, how do we deal with that? Maybe the answer is not make women rabbis. Other things may be possible. Many women feel that the Judaism is for men. It's a man's religion. And the women don't really get a look in. Now, that may be based on a really fundamentally flawed understanding of what the religion is. It's certainly not based on an analysis of mitzvot. If you look at mitzvot, as in tariag mitzvot, it's extremely difficult to come to the conclusion that Judaism is a male-oriented religion, because mitzvot apply equally to men and to women in almost their entirety. There are a few mitzvot which women are exempt from, which are generally open to women if they wish, but a very few, a handful, out of 613, oh, okay, not 613, now we have, like, let's say 300 or so mitzvot that apply today. But most mitzvot are gender unspecific. So if you look at mitzvot, it's hard to say that. If you look at Jewish communal life, yes, you can point and say, well, men get aliyahs, men say Kaddish, men get called up in shul, and although men get...
We're looking at shul.
But exactly, that's looking at shul, and you may have skewed your argument, you may have set your parameters in such a way. I don't want to have that debate there, because you've had that debate. It depends on which communities you're looking at. It depends on whether we've adopted non-Jewish models of communal life. But then there are other issues. Are women uncomfortable or embarrassed dealing with certain Jewish law interfaces? Meaning, are there shilas that women will prefer to ask to women rather than to ask to men?
Yeah.
Now, this is a product very much of the modern world. In the sense that today, for some reason, people feel, I'm not saying it's bad, but it's changed. Women often feel that Taras Mishpacha, Nida Shailas, are uncomfortable asking rabbis. I don't think people always used to feel that way, or maybe they did, but they just didn't complain because they couldn't complain to anybody. But maybe times have changed. Maybe with the expectation that women have these professional roles, they want to get to women. I mean, in medicine as well, do women feel uncomfortable going to male doctors? Or do women say, look, you know, I want to go to the best doctor. I don't care if they're a male or a female. I want to get the best advice. I suspect that women will go to a gynecologist, whether they're male or female, if they say, this guy is a great guy, you need to see him. So they'll say, fine. What happens to, I don't want to go to a male. I mean, maybe it's a bit selective. Maybe not. Are there proceedings in the Bet Din which are women unfriendly? Marriage, Gittin, going for a get, are there areas where women would prefer to have a woman interfacing with them so that they can make the process a little bit more user friendly? These are all questions that come up, and we'll see how some of these questions have been addressed. Right, let's launch into this. What I'm going to do now for the next 15 minutes or so, 20 minutes, is just hit each one of these specific issues on the head and talk about whether they're correct in isolation, and then we can look at the picture as a whole. Receiving a smicha. Is there a problem with a woman having smicha? Now, these days, a rabbi has what we call smicha. Literally, smicha means... today in the Hebrew means like... It literally, the leaning, somech, means to rely on. Why do you call it smicha? Have a look at number one. The original smicha that was needed in order to sit on the Sanhedrin, on the high court of the Jewish law, came originally from Moshe Rabbeinu and passed down through the chain. Let's look at number one, the Rambam. Moshe Rabbeinu samach Yoshua. Moshe Rabbeinu gave a smicha to Yoshua. Bayad, by hand. Shneimah, as it says, ve'yismach es yadav alav ve'yitzaveh. He lent his hands on him. That's why smicha is called smicha, because he lent his hands on Yeshua's head. The Kain Hashem is a Kainim, and similarly the 71 elders, the 70 elders, Moshe Rabbeinu Samcha, Moshe Rabbeinu gave them smicha, v'shaatav aleim shchina, and they were possessed of the Holy Spirit, we might say. Okay? V'oisan tkenim samchu la'acherim, and those gave smicha to the next group of rabbis, v'acherim la'acherim, and then the next group to the next group. Nimsu ha'smuchim ish mipi ish, so it turns out that you had a direct chain of smicha, ad beis dino shal Yeshua, all the way to Yeshua, v'ad beis dino shal Moshe Rabbeinu. In order to sit on the Sanhedrin at the time of the temple, or even afterwards, you have to have that smicha. Was that specific to men or women? Yes. Only a man could have that smicha, says the Rambam. Ketzad. What is this smicha? After Moshe Rabbeinu, they didn't put their hands on anybody's head. They gave him the title Rebbe. They said, you are now ordained. You can be a dayan, even on certain dinim of fines and the death penalty, etc., etc. We will see that to be a dayan, you have to be a man. You cannot be a female dayan in halakha. That is a clear-cut halakhic issue. Pretty clear-cut. There is another opinion, but from Paskin, like that you can't be a woman dayan. You cannot... Dayan as in judge. Yeah, you can be called dayan and be a woman, okay? But you cannot be a dayan, as it were, as a judge. Okay, fine. Therefore, a woman cannot have the original smicha. But today, what is smicha? Today, this is not the smicha we have. So the Ramos says, what is smicha today? Number two. Inyan ha-smicha shenagu bizman hazeh. Smicha today, says the Ramos, writing now in the 15th century, 16th century. Kidei sheyedu kol ha'am sheyigia lahoira. A smicha is a certificate that we know that you're capable of paskening shilas. Umashem oira hu b'rushus rabbi. And what you're saying is given with the permission of your own rabbi. Okay. Hasoim choy, who gave you smicha, lechein im kfar meis rabbi. If your rabbi has already died, ain't a tarech l'smichas. Because really, a person's not allowed to rule while their rabbi is still alive. Once their rabbi has died, if they're talmid chacham, they can rule because he's no longer there. But if he's still alive, so he can give them permission. I don't mind you paskening halacha while I'm still alive. That's called a smicha. Today, that has a completely different function to the original smicha. The original smicha was something to do with the Sanhedrin, it allowed you to be a dayan, etc. Today's smicha is simply a certificate that you are capable of paskening shilas. So then the question is, can a woman have a smicha today? In looking at just as a technical smicha. Well, that depends on the question, are you allowed as a woman to pasken shilas? Are you allowed to rule in halakhic matters? Now, of course, today, in social terms, smicha means much more than just I'm allowed to pass kashrut. Smicha means I'm a rabbi, with all that entails. So giving women smicha is not just a question of allowing them to pass them today. There was a very famous and controversial case a couple of years ago now, Rabbi Avi Weiss in America. I think this is quite well known. He's a very well known rabbi in the New York area. He has a shul in Riverdale, and he is the head of Yeshivas Chavvei Torah. He's a very well-known American rabbinic figure, and he wanted to push a little bit at this issue of giving smicha to women to make a rabbinic title for a woman who could pasken shilas. And there was a big fight as to exactly what the title was. Was it Maharat? Was it Rabbah? Etc. etc. And this caused a great deal of controversy at the time. And indeed, when he tried to innovate this a couple of years back, the centrist orthodox movement in America, the RCA and the OU, people like that, reacted very negatively. Obviously, it goes without saying that the Haredi world was not interested in that. That's not their world. But the modern orthodox world as a whole turned to Rabbi Weiss and said, no, this is not the right time or place for this. We do not accept this. Unless you retract, then we're going to have a nasty situation. And he pulled back from that and decided that that was not the right thing to do. But what was he actually trying to do? So if he's just trying to say that women can pass halacha, which is not really what he was doing something bigger than that. Women can paskin halacha. That's clear. You wouldn't believe the number of women who think that the halacha is that women can't paskin halacha. I don't know who tells them that. I think maybe they assume that. Many women assume that most women are excluded from most mitzvahs. You hear women that say that. Women are potter from most mitzvahs. What nonsense. Like, who told them that? Probably no one. They probably just thought about it. There are men that think that as well. But have a look at number three. The Sefer HaChinuch, when ruling on the issur of drinking wine and entering the Beit HaMikdash, he says like this, number three. V'noig issa bias mikdash b'shichrus. There is a prohibition of entering the Beit HaMikdash when you're drunk. Bizman abayis, at the time of the temple. Bizcharim v'nekevos, it applies to men and women. And similarly, an adjunct from that is menias hahora, and not paskening halacha when you're drunk. That's also a shaila, that's also a prohibited. B'chol makam applies in all times, because we have shaila, even though we have a Beit HaMikdash. Or b'chol zman b'sacharim, with men. V'chein be'isha chachama, and similarly, isha chachama, a woman who is educated, haruya lahiras, who is capable of ruling in halacha. In other words, he says clearly, if a woman is capable of ruling in halacha, she has the same prohibition of doing so when drunk. The clear, it's not even an implication, it's clear that a woman is capable of ruling in halacha. And if you look here in the Piskei Tshuva, in number four, Piskei Tshuva is one of the commentaries on Shulchan Aruch. He quotes here the Bircha Yosef, because of the Sefer Bircha Yosef, after Isha Psula Ladun, even though a woman is not allowed to be a dayan, she's not allowed to rule in matters of Jewish law on a bet din, Mikol Machem Isha Chachama Yuchala Lahayros Hara. She can pass them. And I brought you an extract in number five from a very important sefer by Rav Boaz Arbach, contemporary posek in Yerushalayim, the nephew of Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach. He wrote a very good sefer on women's halacha called Halichas Beisa. In my personal opinion, the best Hebrew, it's not translated in English, but the best sefer out there on women's halachic issues. And he quite passes quite clearly, a woman who is qualified can pass in halacha. And therefore, if you're asking me, can we have women rabbis, i.e. can we take shilas to women? So forget about the rabbis. Can we take shilas to women? Yes. Shilas is just a question of qualification today. If you know what you're doing, and think about it, girls, you do this all the time. Someone comes to you on Shabbos and says, can I make tea with a tea bag on Shabbos? You don't say, well, I can't answer that question because I'm a woman. You have to ask a man that question, then he'll tell you the answer. You say, no problem, you take a tikli rishon, klisheni, klishlishi, you tell them how it works. Ah, Rabbi Jesse, you told them how to make a cup of tea. The answer is no, they asked a simple halachic question. You gave a straightforward halachic answer, which you knew and you were competent to answer. That doesn't make you a rabbi, and there's nothing controversial in that. Obviously, the more complicated the halachic question, the more information and training you need to answer. But that's not gender specific. I don't think anyone says today that men are more intelligent than women. I don't think anyone ever said that. Today, of course, it didn't used to be the case that women had the training to paskin halacha, because they didn't have access to the svarim. Okay, so they couldn't paskin halacha. But now, that is different if they do have access. Yes?
So I think that something that touches on this is things like Nishmat has the USF program.
We'll talk about that soon. They are very careful to say that they don't paskin halacha, although they are very clearly women who are extremely expert in halacha. I know women who are yuatzot, trained in the Nishmat program. I know a woman from that program who received a phone call from a woman asking a specific halachic question, and she said to that woman, I think this is a question that you should speak to your local rabbi about. And she said, the questioner said, I spoke to my rabbi and he told me to call you. So, you know, it's an interesting program. We'll talk about that program a little bit later. But now we can see, we can put that to rest, women can paskin halacha. Again, I'm not saying from this women should be rabbis, but they can paskin halacha. What about leading prayer services? Now, of course, leading prayer services is really not the job of the rabbi. It tends to become that when there's a small community and no one else can do it. But there you have a significant, real halachic problem. It is not possible for women to lead services in all situations. You have technical halachic problems. Who can be moitzi, who with tefillah, who has which chiyuvim? I mean, more, generally speaking, in halacha, if a person has a higher level of chiyuv, a person with a lower level cannot fulfill the person with a higher level's chiyuv. If you have the same level, then you can. You can make kiddush for me on Friday night, or I can make kiddush for you. We can each make kiddush for each other. No problem. Okay? You can't make Havdalah for me on Motzei Shabbos, because my obligation to make Havdalah is a Vaday definite Torah obligation, and yours is a Suffolk Torah obligation. It's questionable. Therefore, you can't be making it. But that's just technical halacha. There's nothing about gender there, it's just technical halachic issues. In fact, there's even a shaila in Kiddush on Friday night. If I go to Shul and daven Mariv, it could be that I already fulfilled my mitzvah of Kiddush in Shul by davening Mariv. If you didn't daven Mariv, the question is not, can you make Kiddush for me? The question is, can I make Kiddush for you? Because you have an obligation d'oraisa and I have an obligation midrabbanon. And the question is, how am I allowed to make Kiddush for you? And that's a question which gets dealt with in your Hilchos Shabbos class. I'm not dealing with that now. Yeah.
In the case of Havdalah,
yes.
Women can make it
for other women. Yes, they can. There are people who do not, women who don't make it for other women. There are other reasons for that, which I'm not going to get into now. Many women will prefer to find a man to make Havdalah for them. But Me'ikah Hadin, according to the basic halacha, a woman can make Havdalah for another woman. Now, maybe she doesn't use an ash, she doesn't use the flame. There's a halacha. I'm not getting into teaching Hilchos Shabbos here. There's also a Kol Isha problem. As to whether men are allowed to sit there listening to this woman singing, now you could say she doesn't have to sing, she can say it. What about Psuki de Zimra? And then you can go down to Shira Chadasha down in town and you can see how they do things there, where you have a woman like quote unquote egalitarian arrangements, or you have a woman doing up to here and then a man doing after there, etc., etc. One of the questions you have to ask is, who is paskening those shilas? Do they have a rav? There's a very good article written in the Jewish Chronicle a few years ago by Rabbi Alan Haber, someone I know, worked with here in Yerushalayim. He wrote about egalitarian minyanim and says one of the real issues is, are they really asking shilas to a real posek who's telling them yes this, yet no that, or are they kind of deciding by committee? Okay, I'm not telling you what they're doing because I really don't know firsthand what they now do, but if they are deciding by committee, that's not possible, that's no longer a halachic process. If they're asking a proper posek and he's saying yes this, no that, fine. Okay, so then there are differences of opinions in halacha. Now, but that really isn't the heart of rabbinic roles. Can a woman officiate at a wedding? Can a woman run a wedding ceremony? Again, that's not really the job of a rabbi. Really, anyone can run a wedding, so you don't have to be a rabbi. You have to be qualified. The Shulchan Aruch says in number 6, if you don't know what you're doing with weddings and divorces, don't get involved in them, because you can mess up people's lives. If you mess up somebody's get, especially, then you've really messed them up badly. Then they get divorced and it's not a real divorce, they get married again and they're not really divorced the first time. You know, in other words, don't, it says, you can very easily mess up. You can create mamzerim. So can a woman lead at a wedding? So look, in theory, again, this is all in theory, there's no reason why a woman can't run a wedding ceremony if she knows what she's doing. Anyone can run a wedding ceremony if they know what they're doing. You don't have to be a rabbi. The question is, do you know what you're doing? You just have to be qualified. Of course, in the real world, a woman running a wedding is not just a technical halachic issue of the woman running the wedding. It's a big statement. The question is, what is the halachic status of big statements? That now gets us to the meta halachic issue. If you're doing something which is halachically unproblematic, but it's making a statement, what does that mean? Some things, I've been to weddings where a woman has read the ketubah. Is that halachically an issue? No. You could have a machine reading the ketubah. You could have it, someone, on a tape recorder. You could have somebody on the other side of the world, on live video link. You could read the news. You could do what you like. The only reason we even read the ketubah at a wedding is to make a break between the beginning, between the Birkat HaErisin, the brachas at the beginning of the Erisin, and the brachas at the end of the Nisuin, because we're going to make bravery agofit twice. Okay? You could have someone standing up and giving a drosha, which very frequently you do. So really, woman reading the ketubah is not a halachic issue, it's a question of, is it a big statement? Okay, so she needs to be able to read the Aramaic properly. Okay, fine, there's plenty of women that can do that, there's plenty of men that read ketubahs that can't do that properly. And it doesn't even matter what you read, you don't even have to read the ketubah, by the way. Very often when you read the ketubah, they miss lines out and all sorts of stuff. There's all sorts of stuff written in the ketubah you don't want read out in public. They just gloss over that, fine. It's only just for, effect anyway. Yes?
Are you talking about women serving as
Yes, I will, in a few minutes. What about making the brachas, the birkas ha'eru, the birkas misuin? Most Sfarim turn around and say, women can't do that. Women can't make sheva brachas, women can't make, the brachas under the chuppah. Again, halachically, I'm open to other suggestions, it's not entirely clear to me why not. If you're going to bring in hilchot tzniut, okay, we'll talk about tzniut. If you're going to bring in the meta halachic, it makes a big statement, Okay, we can talk about that. I have one sefer on Sheva Brachas at home that says, can a woman make a Sheva Bracha? And he says, no. And he brings a source, it says, Pashut. Well, that's ridiculous. I mean, it's obvious.
It's obvious. Obviously.
But I mean, the answer is, I'm not disagreeing with that halachic psak. It may well be that indeed a woman cannot make one of the Sheva Brachas. But you can't bring me obvious. You know, did David HaMelech daven Shacharis with a hat on? Well, do you think David HaMelech would have done without a hat? So it's obvious he done with a hat. No. That's not how you work. You can't use a circular reasoning of that way. So, but there may be big hashgraphic issues. I'm not suggesting for 1 minute that we should be storming down the walls of weddings and getting women making the brachas and things. I'm just telling you, you have to decide whether it's a halachic issue specifically, or whether it's more than a halachic issue, it's a meta-halachic issue. Tzniut at weddings is a specific issue. They bring down the pasuk, look at number 7 before you turn over. Famous pasuk, we'll see it soon when we deal with tzniut directly. This pasuk which says at the end in Micha, Hatznei alecha sin elokecha, you have to walk, well, literally the whole pasuk. Hidi lecha adam, ma tova ma Hashem doirish mimcha. What is God, what's good in life? What does God want from you? Kim asus, mishpat, you have to be fair, act fairly. Avas chesed, you have to love chesed and giving. Hatznei alecha sin elokecha, and you have to act in a way which is tanua with God. This is not talking to women, this is talking to everybody. So Chazal picked up on that idea of Hatznei alecha, walk, behave in a way which is Sanua. We'll describe what that means a little bit more. And they specifically pointed to weddings and funerals. It's interesting. Look at number 8. Hasnei alecha zim alokecha, says the Gemara in Sukkah. Zoi hoitzasa meis v'hachnasas kala l'chupa. Specifically on big public occasions, like funerals and weddings, specifically where people are letting their hair down in all sorts of ways. At weddings, obviously, in a very kind of loose way, and at funerals, in a very emotional way. There's a tzniut angle which has to be thought through very carefully, and that's not just some kind of made up idea. Chazal are very focused on that. We'll talk about tzniut specifically. Can women read from the Torah? So that's an interesting question. Can women, there's a kol isha issue again. Again, it's not really a rabbi's job, but can women get called up for aliyot? So that's a whole shir in and of itself, which raises some fascinating issues. It says in the Gemara, for example, number 9 in Megillah, Tan Rabbanan, Hakol Oilin and Minyan Shiva. Anyone can get called up. That's one of the 7 aliyot on Shabbat. We call up 7 people to the Torah on Shabbat. And it very clearly says, Afilu Isha, there's no reason why a woman can't get called up for an aliyah on Shabbat. But then the Gemara goes on to say, Aval Amru Chachamim, but the rabbi said, Isha Loitikra B'Torah, the woman shouldn't be asked to read from the Torah. No, an aliyah in those days didn't just mean getting called up for a bracha. You were called up to read that portion. Everyone read their own bit. She shouldn't be reading from the Torah, Mipnei Kovat Tzibur, because of the dignity of the congregation. And then you can ask, well, what does that mean? Why is it undignified for the congregation for a woman to be reading from the Torah? Is it because that means there are no men? And shame on you men, because you have a chiyuv of Talmud Torah, and the only person that can read from you is a woman, for you is a woman? Is it some other issue? Is it some public dignity role issue? And what if the congregation say, we don't mind, we'll moichel on our covered, we'll forgive our covered? That's a whole big question. I'm not even going to go there today, as to what exactly is the issue with women having aliyot. But needless to say, that, you know, plugs in here as well, and there are meta halachic issues too. What about women giving a drosha? Can a woman stand up in shul and give a, if they say, my rabbi, the rabbi has to give a sermon. Can a woman give a sermon?
Yeah.
Why not? Yeah. The only issue is going to be one of tzniut. And tzniut will have to try and define, like, how do I decide what is tzanua and what is not tzanua? Is it tzanua for a woman to be the chief executive of a major trading company on Wall Street?
Yeah.
Most people will say, yeah. Is it tzanua for that woman to stand up and give a lecture about, you know, the latest movement in the gold markets? Yeah, people do that all the time. So why can't she stand up and give a drosha in shul after Shabbos? That's a good question. We'll talk about tzniut. It's a moving target. So that's not going to be a specific halachic issue unless you define tzniut in a certain way. We'll see how that is. What about pastoral work? Women, you know, counseling, education, teaching Torah, guidance, visiting the sick, you know, going to the bereaved, going to people at shivers. Well, women do this already all the time. When rabbis and their wives join communities, in this area at least, it's very much a joint role. And there is certainly no halachic reason why women can't be doing that kind of thing. So far, nothing's really hit to the nub of a specific halachic issue. But now something will. Can women take communal leadership positions? So now we're really getting to a different question, which is, like, okay, the rabbi is not just these technical halachic things. The rabbi is the leader of the community, who should be. Unfortunately, in many shuls, the rabbi is just like the janitor, another employee of the shul board. That's not right. The rabbi should be the leader. The community follows the rabbi. Can a woman hold that leadership role? So let's have a look at a few important sources. Pasuk in Devarim, number 10. Son tassim alecha melech. Make yourself a king, which obviously is a leader. Asher yivchar Hashem, which God will choose, alekecha, boy mikerev achecha, from your people. Says the Sifrei, in Devarim, number 11. Melech, veloy malka. It says, make yourself a melech. There's no such thing as a queen. Now, the queen can be married to the king. But she can't be the queen in her own right, as though, like, the eldest daughter of the king is not going to be the queen in halacha. Okay? So, melech v'loy malka. Fine. All right. So, then there is a Gemara that talks about not just kings, but do we learn out from this passage about kings, all communal leadership roles? So, to some degree, yes. Look at number 12. Says the Gemara in Kiddushin, Sam tassim alecha melech mekerev achecha. You have to have a king from your brothers. Says the Gemara, Kol mesima she'ata meitim. Okay, any public appointments that you make to the community, lo yeh ela mekerev achecha, have to be from Jewish people. So they're learning that from the king. They're learning that the king has to be Jewish, so does the president of the community. Okay, so if the king has to be a man also, do we also learn that the president of the community has to be a man? So that the Gemara doesn't say. It learns the Jewish angle, but not the male angle. But the Medrash does. There's a Medrash Tanaim, not one of the most famous Midrashim, but there's a Midrash here in number 13. Sam tassim alecha melech, v'loy malka. Melamed is teaching us, she'ein ma'amidim isha, you can't appoint a woman, b'malchus, for the kingship. And similarly, v'chein kol nesimah shebi'Yisrael, all public leadership roles in the Jewish people, ein ma'amidim behem ela ish, have to be male and not female. Now, interesting. That's a midrash. Does it have halachic weight? Let's just finish the discussion. Does it have halachic weight? If that midrash would just stand alone, the answer would clearly be no. The issue is, however, the Rambam paskens that in halacha. Interesting question. Where does the Rambam suddenly reach for that? He doesn't understand the halacha that way. So have a look in number 14. Says the Rambam in Hilchas Halachim, Ein ma'amidim isha b'malchus. You can't appoint a woman to the monarchy. Shenema alecha melech v'loy malka. Because it says melech, and that means not a queen. V'chein, says the Rambam, kol nesima shebi Yisrael, ein mamani behem ele'ish. The Rambam passes. Jewish leadership positions have to be male. The psak of the Rambam will clearly prevent the woman being the leader of the community. As a leader. If that's what the rabbi is, which is what the rabbi should be, that's going to be a problem, based on that psak of the Rambam. Okay? That's one of the reasons why many communities in the Orthodox world, paskin that a woman cannot be the president of the community. Mm. Now, what about the Christian communities that say that she can? What about our the lady here that we talked about before, Mrs. Appleby, who's just become the president of St. Albans community? So the answer is not so straightforward. The Radvans, who lived slightly after the Rambam, a few hundred years later, asked from Devorah. Now, you all know about Devorah. Devorah was a shofetet. She was a judge. She was one of the shoftim. Okay? How could she do that if we passed it like the Rambam? What would the Rambam have said if you'd have said, oh yes, our next judge will be Devorah? Would he have said, no problem? Or would he have said, she can't. Leadership positions have to be male only. So the Rambam gives two answers. So look at the first answer he gives. Number 15. In time, if you want to ask, Haksim, the Devorah, Isha Neviah, he shofta et Yisrael. It says that Devorah was a Neviah. Now, for a woman to be a Neviah is no question. Women can be Neviot. But for a woman to be a Shofetet, how does that work? So he answers, like Asher, that's not a problem. So the first answer gives, she wasn't really a leader, she was a Poisek. So you see here again another proof that a woman can be a Poisek. He has no problem with that whatsoever. Inami, alternatively, Alpia Diburhaya. Or maybe she was just because she was a Navi, God told her, you're an exception. In other words, normally women can't be, but you can be. Okay, so that could be the answer. But normally women can't be rabbis. The Ritva asked a question, and he gives different answers. He says that Devorah was not really appointed, the people just went to her for advice. or that, you know, she was really acting as a dayan. But a woman can't be a dayan. But they agree that she could be a dayan, but she certainly wasn't a leader. And therefore, Devorah HaNeviah is well discussed on this issue. Yeah, sorry, Amy had a question first.
I just want to understand. It just seems like now, conveniently, that there's no Nevi'im, I can say that it can't happen again.
It's not convenient.
If she had Nebuah, then she was an exception.
But you always,
we don't have Nebuah, yeah, but
I agree with you that it's a little bit frustrating as an argument. But it makes logical sense. If a Navi did something that seems a bit strange, so there is always a logical answer. Well, they were a Navi, and therefore they're bound to do things which are a little bit strange because they've got a direct hotline to God. So it's not necessarily logically good to bring a paradigm case from a Navi. Say, well, they did it. Why can't I? Well. You're not a Navi. I don't think that's a circular argument.
It seems convenient.
Okay, so it's convenient. It's frustrating as an argument, but we have no Nevi'im, and therefore maybe we can't bring a proof from a Navi. I agree with you. I don't think it's convenient, but it is a little frustrating. But okay, so we have to work ourselves up to the level where we'll have Nevi'im again. You know? Yeah.
I don't really understand what it means that she wasn't a leader. What made her not a leader?
Well, it seems from the Pesukim, if you look at the Pesukim, look at the story of Devorah. So what's the story of Devorah? She was sitting under a palm tree, and people were coming to her and speaking to her. And Barak, who was, according to some opinions in the Midrash, her husband, but certainly was the leader of the army, he was coming to her for advice and saying, shall we do this, shall we do that? She wasn't Joan of Arc. That's very clear. She wasn't running into battle on a white steed, saying, you know, forward. In that sense, she didn't lead the Jewish people in the way that he did. So what was she? And that's really the question they're asking. What was she? She was standing. She was sitting under a palm tree, calling the shots. And in fact, she criticizes Barak for saying, if he says to her, "If you don't come with us, we won't go." And she says, "Well, what kind of attitude is that? That's not the way to do things." And indeed, because of that weakness on Barak's part, it turns out the battle was won by Yael, who of course is also a woman. And there's a whole discussion there. So it could well be that what she was doing is giving advice. She was the national advisory oracle, you know. But that's not a proof for being a woman rabbi. She wasn't a leader, could be. She was a national advisor. She was the cleverest person in Israel. No one ever debated that women can be cleverer than everybody else. No one ever debated that women can be neviot. No one ever debated that you can take advice from a woman. That's not even a question. The question is, was she the leader? So maybe she was, maybe she wasn't. Yeah.
You're using the word rabbi and leader kind of interchangeably.
For this purpose, I am, yeah.
But it seems like Devorah was like definitely a leader. Like people come to her and ask her questions, and the leader of the army is asking for advice. She wasn't a rabbi, but like.
But what does it mean to be a leader?
Well, how does she be a rabbi?
Well, like, there's people that are leaders that aren't rabbis.
No, the Rambam is talking about appointments. She wasn't appointed as a leader, and that seems quite clear.
She served as a leader, no?
Well, what does a leader mean? That's what we're trying to work out here. It seems to be a leader for the purpose of this halacha means public official role.
Okay.
Now, you might turn around and say, yeah, but even if you don't have a public official role, you're still something of a leader. That's it.
How much more public is that? You have all these people coming to her. I mean, that's like she's not saying, like, she's not putting herself on.
So again, it may well be she was a de facto leader, but she wasn't an appointed leader. Maybe this halakha is just talking about an appointed leader. Look, the king, let me ask you a question. If the king comes to the Navi and asks them, tell me what to do. So who's the leader? The king or the Navi?
The Navi.
No, the king! Uh-huh. The king's the leader. That's the whole halakha. The melech is the leader.
There's no such thing as a king without the people.
100%. The people appoint the king. And the king then turns around and says, I'm not going to do anything unless this guy tells me what to do. The king's advisor. Come on, every king in every court had advisors. Lahavdil elef havdolas. The mafia bosses have the consigliere, you know, and they ask them, what do we do? Or whatever, you know. Because they all speak like that, of course. And they say, you know, this is, so who's the leader of the mafia family? It's not the consigliere. It's the mafia boss. So Lahavdil, I don't say this like a, you know, it's not a mafia situation, but so the king is the leader and she's the advisor. I don't think Devorah is such a big kasha. Yeah.
I have a question, not about Devorah, but I'm just where's the connection or the source that connects king to rabbi?
The connection is that it's the verse in the Torah in source number 10 that says the king. The Gemara clearly learns that, the Midrash, Halakha, learns it has to be a male. And the question is, do we extrapolate from king to any communal leadership position? The Rambam says we do. Number 14 was the Rambam. It's a process of argument. Clearly the king has to be male, that's clear in halacha. Do you extrapolate and take the dinim, the halachas of the king, to all communal leadership figures? The Rambam says you do, and that includes the maleness. However, I would bring down, look at number 17. Number 17 is the tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein is dealing whether a woman can take a role. In this particular case, this was a widow who was taking over as the head of a kashrus organization. And then the question came up to Rav Moshe, can she as a woman be the head of this organization? Okay, she wasn't the leader of the entire community, but it was a communal leadership position. So look what he says in number 17. Look at this carefully. Sof davar, at the end of the day, he says, Asher yesh harbi rishonim ha-sovrim ka-Rambam. Even though there are many rishonim and many medieval authorities that rule like the Rambam, that indeed the communal leaders have to be male, okay? There are lots of others that disagree, that don't rule this halacha, that say that there is no problem having a woman as a communal leader. This is a whole debate in halacha, but it's even a problem. She came so the Gamma Rashba, but he says, I rule in halacha like the view of the Rambam, that a woman should not be a communal leader. Lechatchila, at least, in an ideal situation, Udiyime came and the Pelukta Ravutah, because it's a debate. Maybe our Torah law. This may even be a Torah law if you're learning it out from the Melech, and therefore a debate, a dispute will go lechumra. It will be strict. Ubevadai hu rag ba'open shaleke is a yichud. Of course, you have to be careful with yichud. If the woman is in charge and she's constantly taking advice with people, you know, she has to be careful of these things. By the way, with Devora, they rate it. They say that's why she did it all under the palm tree. She didn't have an office that she went to because yichud is a problem. And being together, locked in a room with male and female together, there's a hashayla. So she had a public office. But hashkocha, she had shalti, okay, the hashkocha, there's this issue of that you asked me about. Mostly it's working with women, it's not such a problem. And therefore he says at the end of the third line, it's a question of parnosa, this woman has no money, she has to be the head of this organization. He relies on the other opinions that says a woman can be the leader of the community situation. But he finds another way of dealing with it. But he basically rules that even though the Rambam holds that a woman cannot be the president of a communal organization, number one, there are others that disagree with him, and in certain situations you can rely on them. And the question is, in our situation, should we rely on it? I don't know the exact inner workings of the London Basin when they rule that now it's okay for women to be president of the community, but I suspect that they were debating this question. I didn't ask them specifically, but I brought you some other things here from Rav Weinberg, of Hiriak of Weinberg. I need to deal with a couple of other important issues, because I don't want to run out of time. We never have enough time. This class used to be an hour and 10 minutes, and I have 10 minutes shaved off my time, so that's why we're always a bit rushed. So all these theorem assume a 70-minute class. So we're going to go faster. Women as judges is fairly clear cut. A woman cannot be a judge in halakha. That's not the point here. Sniut. Just a couple of words about sniut. Sniut is a very slippery customer. I'm preparing a whole bunch of material on sniut, not for this school, but for another school. It's very, very misunderstood. Sniut is, in certain situations, related to private and public issues. For example, have a look in Yeshaya here. God is called Tsanua, okay? Or he's called a hidden God. Achein ata keil mistater. You're a God that hides themselves. Hiding yourself, Elokei Yisrael Moshiach, is considered to be a virtue. And this is really where we get into a mismatch with current today's society. In late 20th century, early 21st century, and I assume also it's going to be late 21st century, Western society, being out there in everybody's face is not considered to be in any sense a problem. In Jewish thinking, being out there in everybody's face is a problem. You're not meant to do that. You're not meant to want to do that, male or female. Having a public role is considered to be a problem. Have a look here in number 23. Shemaya Omer, Hoiv Esa Malocha, Usnei Esa Rabbanut. There is a permission in Pirkei Avos that said a person should hate Rabbanut. Doesn't mean hate rabbis. It means hate the idea of being promoted to rabbinic leadership. Look at what the commentary there says, Rav Avadia Bar Tzvi, at the end of number 23. Hitrachek Milinhag Sarara Alatibor. Run away from public roles. Sheharabanut mekaveret et baaleh, because being a rabbi drives you to an early grave. Who wants to be in charge? Did Moshe Rabbeinu want to be Moshe Rabbeinu?
No.
He did not. Which Jewish leader ever wanted to be that leader? Which Jewish leader ever wanted to run to leadership? It's a qualification to be a Jewish leader that you're running away from leadership. The people who want to be the leaders are the people we don't want as the leaders.
You can tell us, so obviously, you know those pictures online of like presidents when they're elected, like American presidents when they're elected, yeah. American presidents at the end of their term.
Yeah, look at what they look
their
like.
Their hair is
right,
completely
right.
Different color.
Right. It is, like, you know, it drives people to an early grave. Especially true of women, and I know this is a big hashkafa issue and I'm not getting into it now, but there is this much quoted pasuk in number 24, Kol Kvuda Bas Melech Pnima, that there is a certain kavod, especially for the Bat Melech, to be inside even more than just the Ben Melech. And again, you can use that for many purposes, and it's been used for many purposes. At the end of the day, from a halachic perspective, it will depend in Hilchot Tznius on something called Dati Hudit. That you did, and if you've learned Hilchot Tznius, you'll be familiar with this idea. Who teaches you that here? Dina. Okay, fine. That you did is the minhag of Jewish women. Look at Rashi. The minhag. Look at Rashi number 25. That you did shenahagu benot Israel. What the Jewish women do? Nahagu minhag. How they, what their custom is? Afal gam the loik siva. Even though it's not written down anywhere. People often ask the wrong question when it comes to tzniut. People say, this is not tzniut. Show me where that's written down. That's the whole point. It's not. Tzniut works on the basis of dat yehudit. What does dat yehudit mean? Translate the word. Dat. No, never confuse it with dat. First mistake, okay? It's not dat. It's dat.
Religion.
Okay? That's the second mistake. Okay, the two mistakes people think is dat. Yehudit means... No, Yehudiyot. Yehudit is just means Jewish. It's nothing to do with women. Yehudit. It's like instead of Yehudi, Yehudi, Yehudit. It's a qualifying adjective, okay? And therefore, hello. My daughter's outside waiting.
Oh, I'm like, why are you?
Okay. No, come in. Oh, it's lunch. Just one second. Hang on, let's talk this. So, Dashi Yehudit will determine. The nature of these sneered things. Now, what is dat yehudit? It really depends. It depends on what people do. It's very subjective. Yeah. And let me give you an example. A few examples. It was at a certain stage considered to be highly inappropriate for women to drive. It was a very kind of in your face kind of thing to do in society generally, not just in Jewish society. Now, something clearly changed. If you'd have asked people 60 years ago, is it tsanua for women to drive? Many people would have said, not really. If you ask people today, hardly anyone will say, although some people might still say, not really. But most people will say, I'm sorry, that's changed. What changed? Did the halacha change? No, the halacha is that whatever is considered to be publicly dignified by women for women, that's what that is. Now, there are boundaries. If everyone decides it's right to walk around in beachwear or all around the shopping centre, but that's nothing to do with that you did, because there are objective issues there. There are objective Dat Moshe issues and other issues, which I'm not going to get into now. But these kind of more peripheral areas, for example, it was considered to be highly inappropriate at the beginning of the 20th century, and you asked all the rabbis, almost everyone agreed, for women to vote. Women's voting was paskin clearly as being not tsanua. Women have no place in deciding the leadership of the country and going out into the public and mixing in the polling booths. There was pretty much unanimity. There were a few rabbis that said that women should vote, but mostly they said they shouldn't. Now, today, you won't find any rabbis that say women shouldn't vote. The Agudat Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael, the most extreme parties from certain people's perspective, will you know, provide babysitters for you to go out so that you can vote. For them, obviously, in the election. So what changed? At what point did a rabbi stand up and say, up until now it was not tsanua, now it is tsanua? No, that's not how it works. The answer is, times changed. Women changed. Society changed. Well, society is so different now than it was 100 years ago. And that feeds into the halacha as well. Not in every area, We can't just turn around and say everything's subjective, but in this area. And therefore, if you're going to ask me, is it tzanua for a woman to stand up in front of a community and speak? I think it depends on your community. Some areas the answer is no. In some areas the answer is clearly, didn't used to be, but now it is. And therefore, I think you have to be very careful with this new things. I brought you Rav Cook, I brought you the Sri Di Age, talking about voting issues. This is just another one of those. Yes?
Doesn't it leave Jewish women kind of open to the influence of whatever culture they're around? Is that really like make strides to change anything?
Well, you don't have to be a social adopter.
You can
be class cultural.
You can change the community.
You can.
And
no, Dutch is not defined by sort of outside non-Jewish culture.
Even within Jewish culture.
Okay, so you're going to have to... Dutch will only be defined by the women who are particular to define as something halakhically appropriate. You can't take a group of people who don't care about halakha, men or women, and say you can define the halakhic standards for this community. Clearly not. But some of the people who are, observant and careful, and they decide that something is appropriate. And at this, we see this changing in front of our very eyes. Women's learning. It was considered 50 years ago highly inappropriate for a man to sit in front of a group of young women and teach them Torah in many circles. Like, that's not a job for a man to be doing. And now I think most people would consider that to be totally normal. Let me just finish in the last 5 minutes with some meta-halakhic issues, which are very important. And these, I think, really ultimately are the real issues with women rabbis. Even if you could turn around and say that individually we can solve in isolation some of these halakhic issues. Well, she's going to not do this, and yes, do this, and yes, pass the shahadism, but stand in front of a snua. Well, what about the big picture? Where is this leading? You could raise a number of questions. First of all, you might turn around and say, it's going to make lead to frustration, because we're going to be telling women rabbis they can do this and not that, but the men rabbis can do this, that, and that. So then it's still going to be unhappy even if we have women rabbis, but maybe not. Maybe that's not a good reason not to have them. It's going to cause enormous machloikas to ordain women rabbis. It's going to split large parts of the Jewish world. Is that a factor or isn't it? That's a hard call. If you turn around and say, yeah, but this is important for women, and I say, or someone else says, yeah, but think the cost, how do you weigh those two things up? That's a very big decision. It's a big meta halakhic decision. And if you're going to turn around and say, yeah, but they shouldn't have a problem with it, the answer is, well, they do. So you have to live in the world that we live in rather than the world you'd like to live in. So again, I'm not telling you that these are reasons, definitely not so, but these are factors. Are there any other roles that we can create that do not have these flashcard problems like woolly rabbis, like the Yoetzot, who are very careful not to put themselves out as rabbis, although many people don't really understand what they are. Yoetzot is a program which was started by Nishmat, which is a seminary here in Yerushalayim, which is an Israeli seminary as well, and they train women, Israelis and non-Israelis, to be halachic advisors, specifically in areas of women, taras ha-mishpacha, nidashailas, family purity issues, mikveh issues, etc. They have a website which is extremely good on these issues. They have a helpline, they take calls, they take emails, and they're very careful to say we're not rabbis, but they're extremely learned.
Didn't you say we're the rabbis
for them?
What's that? Remember they are rabbis.
They're what?
Oh, that's the
advisor. Well, here, it's on the sheet. Your thought, put your thought on the kind of website, you'll find them. They don't. Also, a to'enet bet din. There are women who train specifically to be representatives, like lawyers. Well, they are lawyers to represent other women on based in proceedings. So that's also an area which we can grow and develop and encourage people to be part of, which may avoid the kind of women rabbi, if you like, reaction that you get. Or is this good? Is this not good? Some women will say, this is just a sop, you're just trying to put me off. Another woman will say, no, this is fantastic, this is developing great roles. And the last point I want to just make before we finish is that there is a very important Jewish idea. This is a meta-halachic idea, which is we can't be driven by non-Jewish or anti-Jewish agendas. If the agenda is egalitarian, Judaism is not egalitarian. It's not, and it never will be, because there are Kohanim and there are non-Kohanim. And there are men and there are women and there are differences in halacha, and there always, always, always will be. If you have an egalitarian agenda and that's what's driving this, maybe there are grounds for resisting it even if it's halachically okay. Because of the big picture. Look at the source in number 28, we'll finish with this. Ein shochtim laguma kol ikah. You're not allowed to shecht into a pit. Okay? Shecht an animal into a pit. Slaughter an animal into a pit. I'm not getting into exactly why. It's a funny halacha here. Aval oisik guma b'toich beisai b'shvil shikanes adam l'tocha. But you can make a pit and the blood can run into it. I'm not getting into that now. But listen, uvashuk. But in a public place, lo yasekem, you're not allowed to do anything that looks like you're shefting into a pit. Why? Shelo yichake es atzaduk tzedukim, so that you don't support the tzedukim. The tzedukim were a heretical breakaway sect, the Sadducees. Okay. Rashi says, what does it mean? Lo yichake. Rashi says, yachzik yedehem, you'll be supporting them b'chukotehem, chok. Meaning, they've got a rule, they want to do this. Really, halakhically completely neutral. I don't care whether you shecht on a pit, shecht on a bar, shecht on an aeroplane. You know, shecht wherever you like. But since they say, they make a big deal of doing this, if I start doing that, the implications are much bigger than just the thing I'm doing. The thing that I'm doing, the thing that I'm doing is halakhically unproblematic, but it has a bigger picture. There was an enormous amount of thought that went into, do you allow organs in synagogues? In the 1800s, this was a big issue. Not on Shabbat. On a weekday. Or is it like a church? Do you allow flowers at funerals? Or is that a Christian thing? There's nothing halakhically problematic about having a flower on a grave. But we don't do it. Why don't we do it? Because of the bigger picture. What about changing the design of the synagogues to make them look more like churches? In and of themselves, these were not massively problematic, but they were part of a bigger picture. So we resist that, and that's legitimate to resist that. On the other hand, there are other things that have changed. That mitzvah used to be seen as being completely reformed. And now it's caught on a lot, because it's intrinsically a great idea, according to some. Giving sermons in the vernacular in English rather than in Yiddish or Hebrew, all these things were big deals at the time, and yet they've changed. So some things do change. But I think at the end of the day, to summarize, the women's rabbi question is really one of halachic values as much as halachic specifics, because the sum of the parts, the whole is more than just the sum of the parts, if you know what I mean. Okay, we'll end it there, and we will continue in 2 weeks, Be'ezrat Hashem, when I hope to be speaking about abortion.